Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Business is Art on True Chat. We're broadcasting from Studio 2A out of Cincinnati, Ohio today. I'm your host, John Umstead, and with me is my guest, Rich Tafel. Rich is an author. He's the founder and CEO of The Public Squared. He's a minister at the Church of the Holy City, and he's an advisor at Rafa Social Advisors. He also was my coach and mentor and someone I very much look up to. Welcome to the show, Rich.
It's great to be with you, John.
It's really good to have you here. I've been wanting to have you on here for a long time and really felt like, honestly, I felt like I just wanted to kind of find my groove with this show before actually inviting you. So, you know, it's always a work in progress, but I'm starting to feel pretty good about it. So it was time. It was time to reach out. And I'm really glad that you said yes. All right. So folks out there, we're going to be talking today about the social impact of the spiritual entrepreneur, something that's very near and dear to Rich's heart. And we'll learn a little bit about that as we go here today. But we want to start with a little bit of background material and let everyone get to know Rich. So Rich, if you wouldn't mind, I've mentioned that you were my coach, my mentor. If you would please just give us a little bit about your background.
Sure, John. I'm happy to do it. Yeah, I've got a very checkered past that doesn't seem to be very much connected to anything. But here it goes. I grew up just outside of Philadelphia in a large family. Went to a state college in Pennsylvania and always wanted to be a minister. So I went on to theological study at Harvard Divinity School and got my Master of Divinity there. And my first job after that was at the chapel itself there in Harvard Yard at the Memorial Church. Under this incredible mentor of mine, Peter Gomes, who was the minister at the time, who has since passed, but he is a great figure in my life. And found my way into politics and ended up working on some campaigns and ultimately got appointed as a very young man and a very unqualified person to be adolescent health director for the state of Massachusetts under Governor Bill Weld in the early 90s. I did a lot of early work on gay and lesbian issues and AIDS issues, which AIDS was particularly an important topic in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And so from a policy perspective, I ended up doing a lot of policy work. And because I was on the Republican side, I would get calls from Republicans around the country asking for help on the issue because most of the groups doing HIV/AIDS and gay rights were aligned to the Democratic side of the aisle and right. Speaking to Republicans. Right. So after doing that for quite a bit, and as we had a rise in what we call the culture wars of the 90s, I ended up leaving Massachusetts in 1993, going to Washington and opening up the offices for a new organization at the time called Log Cabin Republicans, which was working with Republicans on gay and lesbian issues, on AIDS issues, and it was quite the cultural period for that topic. So I did that for a decade, worked with grassroots chapters, did policy on the Hill, championed issues like gay marriage, and also did worked to help find drugs to solve the HIV/AIDS crisis. I did that for a decade and then wrote a book called Party Crasher, Simon & Schuster. Mm-hmm. After that period, I started my own strategy company to help social entrepreneurs to change the world using some of the policy knowledge I had learned from that pretty grueling period of the 90s.
I can't imagine. That must have been really, really tough, especially being on the Republican side because, you know, I mean, you just don't – I don't know. Everything that's in media, social media, and all kinds of things like that, it seems like everything that you were doing is so in the face of what has become kind of known as the Republican Party. Am I oversimplifying things there?
Well, yeah, I think it was, believe it or not, it was much worse in the 90s than it is, much, much worse in the 90s because neither party supported the issue. Both parties were opposed. And so it was, and it was a very aggressive period of being anti-gay in the political realm. So, so I still have the scars from that, but it was great, great teaching and started a strategy company, worked with social entrepreneurs, did some international work, worked on the AIDS program for delivering drugs to Africa, worked with USAID on healthcare in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And then domestically, I worked primarily with issues like low-income students getting into college, and worked with a number of social enterprises. Those are people who are trying to solve a social problem, trying to bring a business model to solving it. Uh-huh. That was really exciting. Eventually, that led to me conducting a number of social entrepreneur competitions, and the first statewide social entrepreneur competition, which was the state of Michigan. And in that, I would prepare social entrepreneurs for how to pitch to a impact investor, someone who's mm-hmm. interested in impact and financial return. And that leads me to the current moment where I'm actually doing that through this company, Rafa Social Capital Advisors, where I work with investors primarily to figure out where they can have the greatest impact. I do coach a lot of social entrepreneurs, and I've coached over 500 social entrepreneurs into their business. And then, yeah, I have this theological background, this church. I haven't done church work like that for many years. And so this last year, I've taken on a startup church in the District of Columbia, downtown DC. Beautiful, beautiful building, but fallen mm-hmm. on hard times membership-wise working on that. And I'm also still involved in the political realm, and I've been leading some efforts on what is the future of the right, what's the future of the left, and how to left and right figure out how to communicate. I've been doing that for a number of years, but only recently have people understood what I was doing for the last 5 years on that topic of recent events. So that brings you right up to the present time, and I'm sure that raises a lot of questions for you.
It does. And man, we could just have an entire show on the future of the left and right and the work that you're doing there. But we can want to cover the spiritual entrepreneurship topic, and we just don't have 3 hours, but gosh, that is a fascinating topic to me. You'd mentioned redefining, to me separately outside of the show, redefining conservatism in America. And I have a ton of questions about that, but maybe another show if we could get you back. But
I'd be happy to do it. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, the work is important. The discussions are important. It's really desperately needed, I think, at this point in time. Well, probably lots of times in our history, but right now it sure feels awfully sore, and we need some healing. So, yeah, I'd love to talk about that in greater detail. But let's come back to some of the things you just mentioned, though. So, I want to talk about social entrepreneurship a little bit before we get into spiritual entrepreneurship. You mentioned throughout the course of your career, you've really worn many hats. And they all kind of lead, one thing leads to another, and it might look to some on paper like they're kind of diverse and not related, but I think really logically it all is right up to this point. So you're involved with your company, The Public Square, you're involved with Rafa Social Advisors, and you're involved with the Church of the Holy City. And it seems like it's all really part of a greater mission. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people ask me, well, you did the religious thing at a certain life, now you're the political guy, and now you're seen as the investor guy. Mm-hmm. But for me, fundamentally, it's always been all the work, including the political work. It's all been spiritually motivated to make the world a better place. I just find that politics is a very important place to do it. Business is and investing in social change agents is a really important place to do it. And then I think church itself, as we know it, traditional church is about to go through a radical transformation, and that's an exciting place to be too, because I think feeding your soul while you're feeding your business is a very important thing to do. So you're right, they're all interconnected, but it all stems more from a spiritual outlook on life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, I'm going to take a real quick break here, Rich, just before we get really into the topic of spiritual entrepreneurship. So for folks out there, I want to remind you that new episodes of Business is Art are available on Tuesdays by 6 p.m. in the Eastern Time Zone. I also want to talk about this week's True Chat Show of the Week, which is the Justin T. Weller Show. I don't know. Justin is the main man here at True Chat. He has his hands in everything at True Chat, and that means he also must have a crazy life outside, right? So you can find out all about it every Sunday by 9 p.m. in the Eastern time zone. That's the Justin T. Weller Show. So check it out. Let me tell you real quick about True Chat's mission statement here, if I may. True Chat will be the mortal enemy of speculation, innuendo, and stagnation. We'll champion informed opinions and fresh ideas. True Chat will prove that media can be trusted, relied on, and responsible. We won't join the media elite because we're setting a new standard. It's a higher standard, and that's the True Chat standard. Now, to ensure that this show maintains the highest ethical standards, we make it easy for you to voice any concerns you have with today's episode by mailing ethics at truechat.org. Again, that's ethics at T-R-U-E-C-H-A-T. org. Now let's get back into our topic here, spiritual entrepreneurship, with our guest, Rich Taffel. So Rich, we've talked a lot about your background. We've talked a little bit about what you do with Public Square and Rafa and Church of the Holy City. Talked a little bit about politics. If we have time, maybe we can come back to some of those topics. But right now, let's jump into, let's build towards spiritual entrepreneurship. Now, for the listeners out there, Rich actually is the person who introduced me to kind of the whole notion of corporate social responsibility years ago. It's something that I've carried forward at the forefront of my own consulting practice, and something I advise clients all the time to make sure that you are considering a corporate social responsibility program, even if you're a one-person shop. Even if all that means is that you recycle, do something to leave this world a better place than you found it. And the roots in how strongly I feel about corporate social responsibility those seeds were planted by Rich several years ago. Rich, I think you also introduced me to social responsibility several years ago. But why don't we talk about that before we get into spiritual entrepreneurship why don't we talk about that a little bit before we get into spiritual entrepreneurship? What is social entrepreneurship?
Sure. Yeah, it's a lot of buzzwords, a lot of new phrases. It's a little complicated for people. But just to give some quick definitions and kind of lay the land, corporate social responsibility that you mentioned first is when companies are pledging to be socially responsible, whether it's how they use their energy or their carbon footprint or practices within the company. And so that's been around for a while, and it hasn't been all that impactful, but it was the business world saying, hey, you know, there's more business than just our boardroom full of stakeholders. Our community's a stakeholder. Our customers are stakeholders. Our employees are stakeholders. So it's a broader look at the impact of business. And I'm a very pro free market person, pro business person myself. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the forces for good. So when that looks at the world through a different lens, it can have huge impact. Mm-hmm. Now, generally, the way we've dealt with social problems is through either government programs, right, or charity. Both of them have been underwhelming in their achievements. We're still plagued with serious poverty in the United States, income inequality, and particularly in certain cities in the United States and certain rural parts of the United States. It's pretty chronic. So The charitable solutions haven't worked so much, and the government solutions haven't worked. The motivation for both is very good. People want to help those who are less fortunate. One hybrid that's come onto the scene most recently is saying, what if we attacked this social problem, but we did it with a business plan, like a traditional business? Mm-hmm. However, the business would produce two things, both a social impact and a return for the investor. Mm-hmm. For many people, that's really hard to imagine. You can't really help the poor and expect a return. You can't really fight for clean water and expect that there could be a business model that would work there.
Right.
But it's a very exciting, and it's probably the fastest growing segment of the social change world. And even firms like Bain Capital and Goldman Sachs now are unveiling their social impact investment funds that they're going to invest in these for-profit companies that are solving social problems. So it's very, very new. It's very pioneering. And within the social entrepreneur world, there are nonprofits who call themselves social entrepreneurs, and there's social ventures, people who are doing doing it purely as a for-profit business. So that's the lay of the land. Does that give you a little bit of a background on what social entrepreneurism looks like?
Yeah, it does. And maybe if you could just drive it home just a little bit more for our listeners and tell us maybe about, I know you've done a lot of work in Michigan, so maybe just share a little story if you could, something that you've done in Michigan with social entrepreneurs and what maybe some of the impact has been.
Yeah. So as I say, I've worked with a number of them in these competitions and investment. The early ones, the early social enterprises were microfinance. And that was where they would give loans, usually to women and who could never get loans. Mm-hmm. And by investing in those women's businesses, the women turn, they actually paid a very healthy return on the loan and achieved 95% success rate of paying off their loans. That wow. transforms looking at either a charitable loan or just a government program. And mm-hmm. it says, and it inspires entrepreneurism. In the numbers are extremely creative, which is very exciting about the field. Quick example: Rebel Nell in Detroit is a program that takes graffiti from the city that's all over parts of the city, uh-huh. and particularly there's just piles of it at this point. Uh-huh. And they actually take that, transform that cement into beautiful jewelry. Oh. And the women making the jewelry are all formerly homeless. Mm-hmm. They then coach the women on how to set up a bank account, how to rent an apartment, wow. how to get your health care. So they do wraparound services for those women. The price for the jewelry, which I give all the time to at all my holiday events, is substantially high, I guess you could say, although jewelry can be very expensive. But you know, when you're buying Rebel Nell's jewelry, you're actually transforming a woman's life who is the creator of it. They put a little note inside the box. Uh-huh. And so that is something that I was able to play a part in introducing an investor to that program. And it's really booming and it's getting a lot of attention. And other cities are looking at replicating it. So you can see it's a business. It solves a problem, meets a customer right. need. And it is transforming. And a lot of the programs move people into the workforce,
yeah.
Which is really a way to end chronic poverty. So that's a quick example.
That's a great example. I love it. And it actually makes me think of something kind of outside of the business world. And now if we focus on education, you know, I hear a lot of I'm going to sound like an old man. I hear a lot of kids today talking about how, you know, schools don't teach them really life. Right. They don't just some of the things you mentioned, you know, how to open up a bank account, how to rent an apartment, how to do some of these just basic life things, these life skills. And and I guess, you know, when I hear that, I think back on my own education and I think, you know, they're right. You know, we really don't do a whole lot of that. And we probably should do a lot more of it.
That's across the board. It's interesting. So I'm the kind of person, and those of you who are like me out there know who you are, but who had to stay after every day of junior high school for math. yeah. You know, when he was talking about Sally going one way and Bill another way, I was like, why is Sally going there? I couldn't care about the numbers. So I'm not a numbers guy, you know, philosophy, theology. So what's so ironic now is I'm teaching really, you know, people with MBAs, how to create business plans and how to speak to investors. Mm-hmm. It's an ironic twist in my life, but the language of numbers is a very important language, and it's very important for people doing investment. And I find that we're generally in our culture almost completely ignorant of mm-hmm. how loans work, how compounding interest works, how budgeting works.
Yeah.
And people across the board, not just, you know, in low-income areas, but across the board, people are very stressed out about their finances, in large part because of debt. And a lot of it is ignorance. You know, I got a credit card, so I can max this one out, and I can max this one out, I can max this one out. And no one has really told them that, you know, one, you have to pay it back. But with this sort of interest, it's almost impossible.
Uh-huh.
To save. So you're absolutely right. There's huge ignorance. And that's one reason when I I joined Rafa Social Capital Advisors, because they're the largest accounting firm. Rafa Accounting is the largest accounting firm in the United States for nonprofits. And I would say 90% of the entrepreneurs that I worked with didn't understand how to create projections, mm-hmm. how to balance a budget. Many had not filed their taxes, I'm embarrassed to admit. And all those things mean that you will not be invested in. Mm-hmm. So the inability to speak the language of numbers means that you can't communicate to an investor. If you, yeah. you can't communicate to an investor, you won't be invested in. So that's one reason I take seriously what you're saying, which is the education around finance is extremely important, particularly if you're an entrepreneur. But it really is going to be one of the most transformative lessons for moving people out of poverty.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, good. Well, I think we've covered social responsibility pretty well in the limited time that we have. So let's move on. And you're taking now social entrepreneurship a step further, and you are now promoting spiritual entrepreneurship as well. So can you tell us what that is and how is it different from social entrepreneurship?
Yes. If you haven't heard of social entrepreneurship, you certainly have never heard of entrepreneurship, and I don't think it's really even been coined. So it's a completely new phrase. So,
all right.
By way of background, one of the things I discovered in my work was many people who are spiritually motivated to do good in the world, mm-hmm. and yet they completely lacked any knowledge of how to implement their plan. And this includes most religious institutions, most churches. Synagogues, mosques, people are really like me. They've got that philosophy background, but no one taught them that you're really in a sales and marketing and a spreadsheet business. That's mm-hmm. if it's going to be sustainable, you're going to have to understand numbers. So I met so many of that world. I also met so many people who are at the top of their game in the business world, and yet they would come to me for coaching and say, I don't know what my purpose is. I feel pretty soulless. I feel like I'm kind mm-hmm. of bopping around a pinball machine of life with no real direction. Yes, I make a lot of money. Yes, I bought my third house. Yes, we've got the second, third, fourth car. Now I've got the boat. Mm-hmm. But I feel empty. So they needed to develop their interior life and spiritual life. And spiritual people generally who are trying to do good in the world need a business plan. So I'm trying to bring these two worlds together under the auspices of spiritual entrepreneur and imagining this church that I've taken over in DC. Wouldn't it be awesome to turn that into a hub or a workspace, or if you've heard of WeWork, a common workspace for people who want to do two things? They want to meet investors, they want to know how to do their spreadsheet, they want to do their projections. They want to network their business. And at the same time, they want to learn how to meditate, do yoga, read scripture, and then develop their interior life. Mm-hmm. We have divorced our interior life and our exterior life into two worlds in our culture right now. And I think it's a failure and something we need to integrate back in, where we have both a developed spiritual life and a developed business life. And so I'm imagining this new sector going into the future, but it doesn't really exist right now.
Nice. I love it. And so now when you say spiritual, I know the answer to this, but I want to ask it. When you say spiritual, does that mean Christian?
You're right. You do know the answer. No, it doesn't mean Christian. And I happen to be a Christian minister. That's my background. I'm very proud of it. I am fortunate that I come from a faith tradition that believes all faith paths are good. So I'm very excited by anybody's path for making meaning. And in my coaching practice, the bulk of my clients were not Christian, but they were very often on a spiritual path. I'm more interested in what they want to develop on their spiritual path. So that's where it is. And it could be nebulous. It could be I need mindfulness. I need meditation. I need yoga. I'm not sure if that's necessarily spirituality, but if that's the path that they need to work on, I would be facilitating that. So I have a very broad view, but you could say it's developing your interior life.
Yeah. I had a couple of things I wanted to mention. One was, I don't know if you're aware of this, but actually the True Chat channel, if I could throw a commercial out, recently launched a new podcast called Faith in America. And it's really looking at kind of all walks of faith, as well as faithlessness, not any particular religion. And I think some of the intent and the messages are very similar. The other thing that I wanted to just ask you a question, because I want to know if I've been saying this incorrectly to people over the last few years. When I'm in a business consulting environment and I'm talking about focusing on the individual as opposed to the business, because I believe both the personal and the business, or the spiritual and the business, they have to be in alignment. They don't necessarily have to be, you know, rock solid balance, because that static balance is basically, in my mind anyways, impossible to achieve, but they need to be aligned or there's going to be issues. And so when I talk about the various categories that you need us on as an individual, I always throw spirituality out there as kind of that optional category, kind of like you taught me when you were coaching me. And I explained to people, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean religion, but it's kind of, you know, what makes you a better person? You know, how should I be defining that? How should I be presenting that?
Well, that's a good question, because I think the names are fairly, all the names are pretty charged. I just did a focus group of, you know, we did a dinner with millennials on the topic of spiritual entrepreneurship, and said, you know, what do you think of religion? And they all said, hate it. And they were all different. Face. Okay. What do you think of spirituality? Like it. Without organizing that spiritual nation. No, I don't like. So these are all charged. I think it's difficult. We have very different worldviews. I would say that maybe the overriding view of our culture is more of a secular humanist way of looking at the world, that we're kind of beings here for a short time. We live, we make money, we achieve, we have kids, we have grandchildren, we die. Go on. A spiritual outlook would say that you're whatever that essence of you is that goes on forever. Mm-hmm. So these are really different ways. And so in the workplace, it is a bit tricky talking to businesses. I have found I've worked with extremely secular organizations, and I've worked with people who have strong religious backgrounds. I think talking about people's purpose, what they're trying to accomplish in their life, is generally a great way to incorporate that discussion when you're talking about employees. And what's fascinating for me is that the next generation, the millennial generation, is known as the least religious of any generation in the history of the country, and in some ways very aggressively not religious. They are the ones who are asking their employers and demanding that their employers be socially responsible, don't discriminate, treat me with, you know, with respect. So they're bringing certain principles to the table, and then the corporations are saying, how do we become more authentic as a company for these young people? So it's quite a tossed salad right now in the workplace. There's a lot going on with a lot of different names.
Right, and I think you're right. It all kind of means the same thing, but that's pretty interesting. The survey did asking, you know, how you feel about versus how you feel about spirituality, and the responses that you get, because we do kind of tend to think of one as something that it isn't necessarily. I tell folks, if spirituality to you means go out in the woods and hug a tree, then go hug a tree. but as long as you're doing some kind of focus on it, I think it's pretty clear, Rich, why this is important to the individual. And you gave a perfect example of the business person that's done very well for themselves professionally, has all the material wants and needs covered, but feel empty inside. So, you know, filling that personal void, the interior life, as you say, that's pretty powerful stuff. So you can really see why it's great for the individual. But reverse that, flip it. Why is it great for the business?
Well, you ask like a big picture. So what is the business trying to accomplish? And when I'm talking to businesses about being socially responsible or invest in social enterprise, I generally use the word sustainable.
Okay.
So if business, a business attitude that says, I'm going to use you as an employee as long as I need to squeeze you, and then when I'm done with you, I'm going to get rid of you. And if you if you get tired, I'll find somebody else. And I'm going to exploit the environment as much as I need to exploit the environment for as long as I can, and do it the cheapest way possible. And I'm going to produce you know, material, a product that is really going to fall apart, but I'll get the money in the short run. Mm-hmm. If that's a character of business, but if you're looking at all these shortcuts and just short term, you know, how do I make more money? And I can go to the stockholders and say, look what we did this quarter. We improved sales. I would argue that's not a sustainable business model. Mm-hmm. A sustainable business model is to me one that retains employees, retains customers, realizes that you know, if we chop down all these trees and we don't replace them, we don't have that to build our product or whatever the environmental issue is. Mm-hmm. I mean, that everything is connected in how you treat people. What's becoming this is now no longer a it's not a hard sell to business. Yeah. Business understands it. The biggest businesses that I work with understand this at the level of employee retention, that really talent can move anywhere and go anywhere, and that the most successful companies in the world now are the companies that create a creative culture that attracts the best talent and treats it really well, and they're making the most money. The companies that had that short-term worldview, mm-hmm. that it's, you know, how much can we make this year, and it doesn't matter what the cost to the employee is or the customer, just make money. It's not a really sustainable solution. So, in fact, being socially responsible is really the most sustainable business model, and capitalism is moving in this direction in every way. I just said finally at Davos last week, the 1%, I mean, Davos is sort of the gathering of the 1%, mm-hmm. they're all like in a panic about populism. If you create a world where only the elites do really well, it's not really inspiring for, you know, blue-collar workers who are trying to break in, then eventually they're going to come after you. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's just another reason why business should think in a more generous manner.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there are more and more studies all the time that show that when you have called social response, I apologize, my phone is dinging here. I don't know if you guys can hear it or not. But when you have social responsibility programs in your business, the business tends to be, just as you said, tends to be more sustainable over the long haul. It tends to do better over the long haul. And I advise clients that, you know, it's more than a feel good. It's not just, oh, I did a great thing, you know, for my community or for my environment or what have you. There's also great solid business reasons for it. And, you know, not to make it a cold hearted reason for doing these types of things, but the data is there. Yeah, you know, and so I don't know if it's a mindset or if it's karma coming back to reward you for you know, a life lived well or what it is, but it is actually true that businesses do better over the long haul when they are mindful of these types of things. Okay, so Rich, you talked about did we actually talk about the Center for Spiritual Entrepreneurship? We talked about things that you wanted to do at the church and bringing people into share space and we space and that sort of thing. But did we actually talk about specifically the Center for Spiritual Entrepreneurship?
Yeah, that's what I was referring to. And it doesn't exist. It's a gorgeous concept. Beautiful church with a beautiful large parish house. And it's simply a place right now, as you probably know, WeWork is a multi-billion-dollar company in most cities where young people do their officing. It's a very profitable business. I would love to see a version of that focused on people not just develop business plan, but their interior life. And so that's kind of what I'm envisioning. And I think churches would be a very smart business model for places of worship, which 8,000 each year are closing down in the United States. So they, mm-hmm. the market or the mission of many of them is not relevant to the upcoming generation. I think that spiritual leaders have an obligation to be relevant and be true to what they believe, not to, you know, chase after people and be the church of what's happening now, mm-hmm. but to meet people where they are. And I think that's this rising generation is extremely entrepreneurial. We've never seen anything as entrepreneurial as this upcoming generation. So it's a great place to meet them where they are.
Right. So this is, you're still kind of in the concept phase Or have you actually implemented, and it sounds like you definitely see this as a replicable model that can be repeated over and over again across the country or world?
Yeah, it is like I'm holding the first so-called conference on this topic at the church this spring. It'll be only a few leaders of all different faiths, actually from around the world. I've been approached by people. So it's a very interesting nice. Topic, but it's so nascent. It is so like new that, I would say that you could argue that for many years, hospitals were run by the Catholic Church, for example. Right. Many still are. There's a spiritual motivation to do a business plan. So the model, is argued, has been around forever. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we've really seen this complete integration and acknowledgement. When I worked, for example, in Detroit, I remember a woman saying to me, you know, I'm embarrassed to admit this to you as my coach, but I had a vision of the Virgin Mother that inspired me to work with kids. And if I tell people, they'll think I'm nuts. And so it's my secret, but that's why I'm motivated to do what she was doing. And I said, wow, I want to live in a world where you can talk about your, you know, why you're spiritually motivated to do this great thing. But I'd also, and I think there are a lot of investors who would say, wow, that's a tenacious entrepreneur that shares my values. I think I'd like to put my money there of all places. That's really intriguing. And that doesn't exist right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very, very interesting. All right. We're going to run out of time, Rich. I really am interested to see. I wish I could fast forward a year from now and see how this is doing and see how many times the model has been replicated. So I'm going to be definitely keeping an eye on this because I think it's wonderful. I think it's great work, and I really applaud what you're doing. I wish you much, much success with it.
And thank you for having me, and I wish you much success, and thank you for having me on the show.
I really like to dig into the future of the left and the right and the work that you're doing with respect to redefining conservatism in America. We just don't have time for it, but oh my gosh, that is a topic that I'd really like to hear a lot more about, so maybe I'll get a chance to follow up with you.
Excellent. I look forward to it.
All right, Rich, thanks very much again for being here. Appreciate it very much. I think social responsibility and now coining the phrase spiritual entrepreneurship or term spiritual entrepreneur. You heard it here first, folks, from Rich Tafel, spiritual entrepreneur. Be looking for that and see how you might be able to get involved in those types of efforts. If that's a calling that you're hearing, then listen to it and chase after it. So, Rich, before we do close out, where can people find you, Public Squared, Rafa Social, anything else that you're involved with or any other causes that you'd like to promote?
I think you named it. Rafa Social Capital Advisor site, there's a page there, Public Squared, thepublicsquared.com, there's information there. And theswedenborgcenter.org is the website for the church in Washington, D.C. So we have opportunities to reach if you're interested, or through you, they can contact you.
All right. Great. Well, thanks very much. Again, really appreciate it. So folks out there, if you haven't already, make sure you download True Chat's mobile app. You can connect with us on social media right in the app or visit our website, truechat.org. That's TRUECHAT.org. Again, that's truechat.org. True Chat's network offers a great lineup of shows on sports and politics, pop culture, entertainment, business, lifestyle, and more. So make sure to explore what our network has to offer. For Businesses Art on True Chat, broadcasting from Studio 2A in Cincinnati, Ohio, I'm your host, John Umstead. Again, my guest has been Rich Tafel. And thanks again, Rich. Thanks so much for being here. I really enjoyed the conversation. And thank you all for tuning in. And we'll see you next time on Businesses Art. Be the Change.